On the Radar, an Eagle News program that takes you beyond the streets and brings you closer to national and international breaking news as it unfolds. Tune in every Monday to Friday from 1 to 2:30.
Good afternoon, Namibia. Welcome to the Wednesday, 11th of June, 2025 edition of your trusted news source, On the Radar, with your host, Sean Jordan Uisep. Today, we bring you the biggest headlines and key developments from across the country, keeping parents, professionals, and citizens alike informed and empowered. Thank you for tuning in to On the Radar, your go-to platform for comprehensive news coverage, insightful analysis, and exclusive stories that matter. Stay connected through the Eagle FM mobile app, our website, and our nationwide radio frequencies. And for breaking news, don't forget to subscribe to the Villager WhatsApp service. As we step further into Mental Health Awareness Month, it is important to remember, take a moment, take a breath, and reach out when we aren't at our best. And now, for the news. This morning, the Ministry of Health and Social Services hosted a significant session at the Thuringerhof Hotel, in Windhoek, marking the observance of May Mental Health Awareness Month. The session was specifically organized for members of parliament under the theme Turning Awareness into Action, with the aim of deepening engagement on mental health policy and providing mental well-being on all levels of governance. With Namibia being ranked fourth in Africa for suicide prevalence rates, it has been deemed imperative for the country to take actionable steps in combating these figures. The event was officially opened by Mr. P. Ithindi, the Executive Director of the Ministry, followed by a keynote address from the Honorable Minister of Health and Social Services, Dr. Esperance Louvindao, where the Minister called for urgent action and leadership in addressing mental health challenges across the country, noting the role Parliament can play in shaping supportive legislation and budget allocation. Let's take a listen.
It's just things really got the best of us with the appointment and everything that proceeded thereafter. However, just emphasizing the importance of senior government officials, particularly within the Ministry of Health, at least that is our commitment, to say we vow that we will sit with the necessary experts, we will sit with the experts in psychiatry to hear from them. We want to hear from them. We don't want to hear about issues when they're making headlines. We want to hear what are the issues. Will we be able to solve one of those problems immediately? Probably not. So let me not sell you dreams, but we will be able to work together and say, okay, fine, with the budget that we have and with your needs, how can we begin to meet each other halfway? And that is the commitment from the ministry side, and that is relevant for psychiatry, that is relevant for obstetrics and gynecology, for surgery, for pediatrics. We want to sit with the experts, acknowledging that the ED and myself are not necessarily the experts, we are merely the drivers, but in order to drive, you need people in the bus with you. And a lot of the times the people can help navigate because they've been on those paths before. With that said, at almost each of our health facilities, we need consequent investment in specialized mental health units with the necessary support systems and health professionals to provide the necessary services. As legislators, the role is pivotal. And I speak now particularly to the parliamentarians here today. You possess the constitutional authority and societal influence to advocate for increased budget allocations. I said it before, I will say it again. Healthcare is not one of those things where at a certain point, you know, we must begin to have conversations that are open and robust enough to say that, but listen, there's only so much substitution that we can do in healthcare. You know, at a certain point in time, we must acknowledge the fact that if we need more mental health facilities, there is really no substitution for that. We need more facilities. And in order to build more facilities, we need more money. And so therefore, it is our collective duty, not just to see each other as opposition, but to stand together and say, we must advocate for increased budget allocations to be allocated. Secondly, is to support the passage and enactment of updated mental health legislation. And this, I just want to highlight this briefly, is to say that in office, as we've taken office, a lot of the acts or a lot of sort of the legislation is so to speak, old. And it doesn't speak to where we are right now. It doesn't speak to Namibia of 2025. And that becomes problematic. It really does become problematic. And so it's to review this in these in a timely manner, but also perhaps to institute and to say, well, instead of waiting for these things to become old and outdated, perhaps to actively say that, you know, every few years we will actively review these things, as opposed to waiting and being reactive and saying the bill is old. We can then say to say every few years we will review these and we will go back. Yes, they are laws, but they are laws that can be amended for the benefit of the people that they are created to serve. Then thirdly is to champion stigma reduction initiatives. Stigma reduction is something very close to my heart. I believe that we must have much more open conversations. But even in this stigma reduction, I wish to emphasize that the issue of education is so important, because a lot of the times there's a lot of misinformation going around about mental health, and it's very sad to see. You know, people either have too little information or they have information from Dr. Google and they want to use that to diagnose their friend, their best friend, their cousin, diagnose people on Twitter, diagnose, and that becomes a problem. So these are things that we need to address. As we look at addressing stigma reduction initiatives, we must also look at addressing, providing the correct information to people. I was saying it before, long before my appointment, and I continue to say it. We do not have the luxury anymore of saying, well, Esperance is a doctor, so she must know. And I don't need to know anything about, no, we don't have that luxury anymore. We don't. At this stage in time, every single one of us should be our brother's keepers. Every single one of us should be our neighbor's keeper. I'm not saying that we must all be healthcare workers. Please don't go and quote me and say, Rindau says, you know, the entire Namibia must know, please know. What I'm saying is that there must be some sort of path or leeway where we say yes, but at least to know the basics, at least to understand the basics, to say yes, there are mental health issues that exist, at least to understand the basics, to say if your cousin in the village somewhere in the north, your grandmother or your uncle keeps calling saying that your cousin is hearing voices or seeing things that are not there, you know, you might not know, okay, how do you diagnose schizophrenia or a brief psychotic, you know, disorder, whatever, that's fine, we don't expect that. But at least for you to have some sort of understanding to say, no, but that's a warning sign. It's something to be taken seriously. Please take him to the hospital. Please take him to Ward 16 or wherever else, so that, I'm not sure if it's still referred to that, my apologies, so that then they can get the necessary help that they need. But we must do away with, because a lot of the time the stigma comes from misinformation, and this is misinformation that must be tackled. It's misinformation that must be dealt with. And please get me right, we do not in any way say that the other actors in the multi-sectoral approach are not important, highlighting the role of the churches and all of that. But what we're emphasizing here is that where medical attention is needed, let us seek medical attention. And let us not use excuses in order to be able to address the necessary issues. Then lastly, ensuring the implementation and monitoring of policies so that mental health services are accessible, equitable, and of quality across all regions. I was having a conversation, I'm not sure with who, whether it was my ED or somebody else, and there was a picture of one of our mental health facilities, one of the rooms. And I asked, and I believe it was the ED, and I asked and said, but why does the room look like this? And I don't remember the response he gave me, but I think it is just to highlight that people that have, you know, some sort of illness or whatever the case may be are not in any way, you know, subject to less of humanity and humane conditions. And this is important to highlight. So whether somebody has schizophrenia, whether they have bipolar disorder, whether they have, you know, a personality disorder, MDD, a delusional disorder, you name it. It is not an excuse for us to just, you know, push them into a corner, you know, in facilities where you yourself would not be willing to stay. If it is a facility where you yourself would not be comfortable in staying, then we have work to do. If it is a facility where you would not be comfortable leaving your child there overnight, then we have work to do. And it is important that we begin to address all our public health facilities in that very manner. Support the implementation of mental health promotion at the community level. This is important. physical activity, social connection, especially for young people, older persons, as well as people with disability. A key component of mental health that I just wish to highlight very briefly is regarding this issue of social media and how that ties in very much to mental health and how we have to be very cautious. I'm not sure, once again, I look at the experts, excuse me if I'm making reference to the wrong terms, you know, things like body dysmorphic, you know, disorder, I'm not sure if it's still referred to as such, where people see a certain image portrayed on social media. This person looks like this, and so this is how I must look, and if I don't look like this, it's a problem. And this is being fed to us every single day. Every single day it's being fed to the young people, and this is then the society that we are creating. And so we must be very mindful of that when we talk about promotion at community levels. A lot is being done. I emphasize that. Please do not take this as the minister was just bashing everything. We're not doing anything right. No, we're doing a lot right. However, this is merely to emphasize that there is a lot to be done. That is all I'm emphasizing. We've done a lot, but there is a lot to be done. Since 2023, the Ministry of Health and Social Services has been integrating mental health into our primary health care, developed standard operating procedures for mental health screening, training healthcare providers, and rolling out innovative tools like community mental health toolkits. We are also revising our mental health legal framework to better align with human rights and global standards with a new mental health bill expected to be... I change this. You know, sometimes they provide me a speech and even as much as I've gone through it, I tell them the first point is I usually only read 20% of the speech because health is something I'm so passionate about. This is me reading that 20%. But I noted here that we said mental health bill is expected to be finalized this fiscal year. No, the mental health bill will be finalized. Not expected to be finalized, will be finalized. I've said it to my team, I'll say it again. If we have to sleep in offices to get it done, let's do so. That's why we've been hired. Providing mental health interventions at the community level is crucial for the early identification of individuals experiencing crisis or facing mental health distress. This is important. Oftentimes, we wait very long before presenting to the experts. We wait very long. It's been years that this person has been exhibiting these symptoms, and then only we come to the experts, and that is problematic, and that must stop. The ministry plans to conduct a benchmarking visit to Zimbabwe in July 2025 to learn from the experts and explore how we can adapt such innovations in Namibia, ensuring culturally relevant and community-driven solutions. I wish to highlight there very importantly, I believe I mentioned about the mental health facilities and that these must be adjacent. We want to pause here and just very quickly acknowledge, and this must be explicit, to acknowledge the work that has been done by the colleagues, understanding very well that it is a high-pressure environment and understanding that oftentimes the necessary resources have not quite been provided to the necessary staff. We take note of that. We also are well aware of the facilities that are currently present and available. And when I look at the numbers that we mentioned about inpatient and outpatient, these numbers and the number of the facilities we have do not go hand in hand at all. If I'm not mistaken, at this point in time, I am aware of Ward 16 at the Oshakati Hospital and then also the facility here by the Windhoek Central Hospital.
Now, let's make room for a commercial break. But we'll be back before you know it, so stay right there.
No matter where you are, if you have a mobile device, you can tune into Namibia's number one talk radio station by downloading the Eagle FM app on the Google Play Store or on the Apple App Store. Download the Eagle FM app to tune into live Eagle FM programming or to listen to podcasts of previous broadcasts. Eagle FM, Namibia's number one talk radio station.
Want to know about Namibia's latest business and economic news? Then look no further than the Villager newspaper. The Villager is an e-paper that is published every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday for free, directly to your phone or computer. To become a subscriber, simply send a WhatsApp message with your number and email address to 081-200-4144. Be sure to save the phone number as a contact. The Villager, wherever you are.
Welcome back. Now, the Ministry of Education has reaffirmed its commitment to inclusive and accessible education by promising that every child will have a guaranteed space in school by January 2026. This bold pledge aims to eliminate barriers to education, ensuring that no child is left behind due to lack of school placement. In an engagement with the founder of the National Organization of Parents in Education, Polis Mbandu Hawanga, the organization has urged the government to employ inclusivity, highlighting that some of the problems people are experiencing is that of the official language. However, it is the responsibility of the government to ensure that all people are included in the circulation of information by making the information available in all languages. Earlier, my colleague Joseph Jeremiah sat down with the founder of the National Organization of Parents in Education to gain further insight into the matter from a parental perspective. Here's what he had to say.
Let's say every year it has been an ongoing issue. And based on a report, the Ministry of Education, Innovation, Youth, Sports, Arts and Culture has assured the nation that every child born in 2020 will have a space in school by January 2026. And as parents, we just want to have an insight of what do parents think about this.
Yeah, I think it's really commendable. We have to appreciate because we can all, in terms of education, we can see the vision on where we are pointed to in ensuring that our Constitution of the Republic of Namibia, Chapter 3 on the Fundamental Human Rights and Freedom, if you go to Chapter 2, to Article 20, which outlines the very supreme law on the expectation on access to education for all, we will then realize that this kind of sentiment it should be an expectation from all of us, because education should be accessible to all. And it's also, we know that by constitution, especially on the lower grades, let me say primary education, up to secondary now, the law actually does not permit our children to stay at home without going to school, especially at primary level. So, and I think this is what is actually still what is compelling our national leader, even Her Excellency Dr. Netumbo Nandi-Ndaitwah, to really make sure that this will come out clear, that every child should have access to education by all means. But as on the part of the parents, from the onset, I should really, maybe first of all, I should appreciate the leadership on making sure they articulate their vision. If you can, I just went through our constitution and to see to it that if the Education Act in terms with regard to admission of learners in the school, if it's aligned. And we should really applaud that the current Education Act number 3 of 2020, with regard to admission to schools for learners, it is well properly aligned to the constitution. And then I went further to scrutinize the guiding tool that was provided by the executive director on his circular number 5 of 2025 on admission of learners in schools come 2026. It is also properly aligned to the guiding law. So now what I'm trying to say is this. Like always people say, the vision is given is clear. The legal tools and the directives, let me say the circulars and the directives given are very plain and clear. But where we always have a very serious hindrance or shortcomings is on the implementation.
Exactly.
You see, the implementation part, even as I'm a school board chairperson at one of our school in Kavango East in Rundu. As I speak now, I was just from the school. I went and do an inspection on the preparation of our admission committee at our school. And I have to make sure that we are in compliance to this education, to this directive of the executive director. And I even went and talked to the parents, and we provided them guidelines and all the information they needed with regard to the submission of their application as guided by the Education Act, Section 9, and also with the directive on the admission of learners in the schools. But the challenge that we have as Namibians, not only in education, of course, where you are given a proper guideline, a proper law, guidelines, circular, directives, but you see how people go about implementing this.
Okay.
It's where we have a concern, because at the end of the day, you are still going to find a lot of learners not being placed in the schools. If they are placed in the school, sometimes it's a young child for primary education, primary admission. But this child has been admitted to a school far from the place of residence. And you know, and sometimes you find the child has been admitted in the school where the issue of languages becomes a challenge, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I think the implementation part, I should maybe shift it to the part where, when I read this circular, I can see that the school board is not referenced to take ownership, even the regional education forum. You will only find them referencing and directing the staff in the Ministry of Education.
Mm.
But the education stakeholders, like where the parents are coming in and they represent the parents in the school boards, even the other stakeholders, like those who are representing learners,
mm.
the students, let me talk about the LRCs, NANSO, you know, these are very important stakeholders that should also be properly guided, be involved in this process.
Mm.
From onset, this is the challenge that I'm already seeing. Because if I couldn't go to my school now and ask and be availed with the forms and with the process that's going to take place, my school could go ahead and the admission committee, it could go ahead and do the whole process without the parental involvement who are in the school board. So at the regional level also, you find that there's supposed to be a regional education forum. Unfortunately, you find the director is directed just to deal with the regional admission committee. Where is the regional education forum coming in? The regional education forum is an inclusive body that has the parents, the civil organization, the representation from the local authority, the representative from the regional council, the traditional authority. When you send a directive or a circular, which is going to be, you are directing the director, you are directing the principal, you are directing the admission committee. Now, where did you left the school board?
Mm.
Where did you left the regional education forum? This is where the problem of implementation comes in. Then you will end up with what we have observed as a national organization of parents in education. Come January, a lot of parents will be flocking all around schools, did not have admission yet. Yet there is an admission committee in schools, admission committee at the second, admission committee at the regional level. What were they doing? Because they are not doing it in an inclusive way.
Mm.
In an inclusive manner. And that's why I'm appreciating the fact that now you really give an accord to recognize the fact that as a national organization of parents in education, we can give our perspective. I'm sure our leaders are listening,
mm-hmm.
even especially our ministers and so on, those who are following. This is the approach that we need to take. We cannot do this thing in isolation.
Mm-hmm.
Some school boards are even clueless. They don't know that there is such a circular that exists. That's why as NAOPE, we are now appreciating this opportunity you are giving to us, so that we can be able to explain these things, that school boards must be actively involved in the admission.
Mm.
You see. The regional forum must be involved actively. The moment it's involved, you have involved the traditional authority. You have involved all the stakeholders.
Mm.
But these directives which are just going directly to the staff, the staff are not sometimes, only in some regions where the directors People who are really committed. In some region, in some circuits, in some schools, they will still take shortcuts and do what suits them. And we parents and our children are at end are the recipient of this. So let me maybe put it on that point that we will work hard, but I think that's where I'm seeing admission is likely to still let us see a lot of children staying at home, a lot of children walking distance going to schools. And if this admission process procedure is not properly implemented, when I read this circular, it's one reason why we are not properly, we are not having good plan, developmental plan, performance plan for our schools, our circuits and our region, because this admission guideline informs the budgetary provisions and the resource allocation and the recruitment of teachers and the appointment of HODs and principals is determined by the number of learners who are admitted in the schools. So the moment we miss out the proper implementation as directed by the executive director, of course, with the endorsement of the minister, we have, that region is going to face a serious problem come January admission for the learners.
So, Mr. Paulus, we have seen that there is always going to be that yearly admission problem, as you alluded to earlier. Now, as a representative of parents, what are some of the challenges parents are facing when it comes to children enrollment at the beginning of the year?
It's still the lack of inclusivity.
Yes.
And the issue of being reactive. Reactive in a sense, as I've just alluded on these guiding tools. Not every parent can read these circulars. These circulars are well articulated in our official language.
Mm-hmm.
And they are not in our mother tongues, mm-hmm. in our own mother tongues.
Yeah.
It's already a shortcoming because we, as a national organization of parents' education, we have our regional steering committee and the chairperson in the all 14 regions. What could happen if we were doing things properly? By now, my brother, we could have received this circular as a copy from the executive director. We could have already sent it out to all our regional members. They could already go to the radios and disseminate this information in our mother vernacular languages.
Mm.
And this advocacy, I want to join our Honorable Minister, Sadet Steenkamp, our Minister for Education, Innovation, Youth, Sports, Arts and Culture.
Yeah.
I followed her very well when she was in Karas. She is calling on mother languages, parents, and this is actually the way we must go.
Mm.
You see. So we are already seeing that here. The only reason why we'll see a lot of learners not.
And we interrupt this report for a special message from our friends Paratus.
Taking flight has never been easier. Paratus is introducing SkyFi internet packages with speeds that will have you reaching for your seatbelt. Starting from $500, excluding VAT, per month, with speeds reaching up to 10 megabits per second. There's even a prepaid option where you can top up your SkyFi internet for just $15 per gigabyte. No contracts, no fuss. Visit your nearest Paratus branch to find out more. Or go to paratus.africa/Namibia to sign up online. Always prepare,
Paratus. And now, back to our report.
They haven't been admitted. It goes to the way we are going about doing things. I don't know whether the colleagues who are working in the Ministry of Education, I want those who are listening and those who will be able to follow. We parents, we are qualified teachers by divine call of God.
Mm.
We are also teachers. So when they get this information, they must not keep it to themselves. They must give it to the parents through the school board. Send this information to the parents. We are also their colleagues. So if they are not including parents at all levels, we are going to provide, we are not going to deliver the promised quality education.
Well, Leonard, let's make room for a commercial break, but we'll be back before you know it. So stay right there, only on Eagle FM.
No matter where you are, if you have a mobile device, you can tune into Namibia's number one talk radio station by downloading the Eagle FM app on the Google Play Store or on the Apple App Store. Download the Eagle FM app to tune into live Eagle FM programming or to listen to podcasts of previous broadcasts. Eagle FM, Namibia's number one talk radio station.
Want to know about Namibia's latest business and economic news? Then look no further than the Villager newspaper. The Villager is an e-paper that is published every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday for free, directly to your phone or computer. To become a subscriber, simply send a WhatsApp message with your number and email address to 081-200-4144. Be sure to save the phone number as a contact. The Villager, wherever you are.
No matter where you are, if you have a mobile device, you can tune into Namibia's number one talk radio station by downloading the Eagle FM app on the Google Play Store or on the Apple App Store. Download the Eagle FM app to tune into live Eagle FM programming or to listen to podcasts of previous broadcasts. Eagle FM, Namibia's number one talk radio station.
Welcome back. Wednesday's edition of the Villager newspaper is out now. Grab your copy and read up on the stories we've covered, which include proper grain storages can improve food security. Economic diplomacy and international diplomacy must address domestic issues. Beverage production and export declines in March 2025. The government backs raw skin export levy reduction. Financial literacy is a must in school. Stay ahead on the latest news by subscribing to the Eagle Media House WhatsApp channel. Text 081-200-4144 for updates. Now, the Communications Regulatory Authority of Namibia, in collaboration with the GIC, has hosted a high-level information session this Thursday highlighting the major digital policy shifts. At the center of the discussion was the official law of the NomCrist, Namibia's Computer Security Incident Response Team, a national body created to combat the growing threat of cybercrime. NomCrist will act as the country's frontline defense against digital threats such as banking fraud, data breaches, phishing scams, and ransomware attacks. The team is expected to monitor cyber risks around the clock, respond swiftly to incidents, and work alongside telecoms, banks, and law enforcement. Its creation, therefore, marks a critical step in protecting both online and private sectors as more services move online. But what does this mean for the Namibian people? What are some of the legislative implications of this, and where can the gap between experts and laymen be reduced? To answer these questions and more, I sat down with Tanya Hopke, a cybersecurity awareness specialist at Maynard Cybersecurity, for an in-depth analysis on this pressing matter. Let's take a listen. Good afternoon, Ms. Hopke, and welcome to On the Radar.
Thank you, Sean.
All right. Well, during an information session with the Government Information Center, the Communications Regulatory Authority of Namibia CEO made an announcement specifically speaking on a new team called the NAMCSIRT, a new national cybersecurity team tasked with protecting citizens and businesses from growing online threats like banking fraud and data breaches. So firstly, I wanted to ask, what key instruments, in your opinion, can be used to gauge the success of the team?
Great, thank you. So I think before we jump into exactly what key instruments can be used, it's helpful to think about what their mandate is. So their goal is to coordinate cybersecurity incidents in terms of, this means that they get to be proactive and reactive services, including alerts on attacks, current ongoing vulnerabilities, and offer guidance on recovery and protection.
Mm.
Okay. So then we can think of what key instruments can be used to gauge the success. So we can look there and think of things like a number of incidents that they've helped to resolve, their response time, how quickly they responded to these incidents. We can also look at the institutions or the that they've helped and say, how happy are these institutions or businesses, both there with a proactive advisory potentially, as well as the reactive help. And then, of course, we would look at, is there really a reduction in the cyber threats and vulnerabilities that are targeting Namibia?
Well, speaking back to that, how can this team look to balance privacy concerns with the safety of the Namibian people?
So the team explicitly states, and of course is governed by the privacy laws that we have, but in addition to that, they can look to, you know, do things like request or collect the minimum amount of data needed to solve a problem. So that's a standard data privacy principle that we see in Europe a lot. Don't collect more information than you need to solve your problem. Another one is that once they've collected the data and they need to spread it with multiple people to analyze it, they can actually anonymize that data before it's given to people. So the team can help solve the problem, but it's anonymized, so they can protect the privacy of the business or person that was affected.
All right. So there's a bit of confusion about what legal authority this team would fall under, seeing as this is a team that will be operating under the jurisdiction of CRAN. So could you give us some insight into what legal framework this team would be operating within?
So the Namibia Cybersecurity Incident Response Team was established in accordance with a policy decision by the government of Namibia. So that was a policy decision that was made. However, it's housed under CRAN. Exactly. So it has the authority to coordinate cybersecurity incidents on behalf of its constituency, and then it makes operational non-obligatory recommendations.
I see. So how can this team work with the private cybersecurity sector to help businesses and private citizens navigate cybersecurity?
So going back to its mandate, it's about proactive prevention of threats as well as reactive. How do we react when there is a threat and how do we recover? In their mandate is also the fact that they make recommendations, and then it's the responsibility for the institution to implement them.
Right.
So what they can do is they can be proactive in expanding their outreach to reach as many institutions as they can, as many businesses as they can, share their guidance on, you know, how to be proactive in preventing threats, as well as the reactive solution. They can make guides or best practices available, so publish something on what are the best practices to be proactive and prevent threats, and what would you do in the instance of a cybersecurity incident.
I see.
In addition, they can also contribute to public awareness. And then if we also think about new legislation that might come into Namibia to protect us, they could contribute to this because they have the expertise.
All right. Well, how can the NumChrist, in your opinion, bridge the gap between cybersecurity and Namibians? Because a lot of the normal average Namibian really doesn't, I guess, understand the importance of cybersecurity.
So the key thing here, in my opinion, is to focus on education. And this is also what we do. We believe in it very strongly that the education is important. So it's about educating the individual, educating the business, educating that there are threats, what can happen if there is a threat. And then very often, it doesn't have to be too complicated to take the first steps to protect yourself. So they can share simplified communication with steps to protect yourself, make information very accessible, and really engage in the community to create a culture of cybersecurity awareness.
I see. So if you, for the listeners that may not have heard our previous interview with each other, we had spoken about the new legislation in South Africa and how that could be implemented in Namibia. Now, if we think back to that, a lot of what this team does, the mandate that this team is carrying out, is what you yourself had said was what was needed in bridging the gap in cybersecurity and bringing cybersecurity into bringing Namibia into the 21st century. So do you think this is a right step, like a good step in the right direction for the cybersecurity sector?
It's definitely a good step in the right direction. It establishes a centralized response team for Namibia. It focuses on our critical infrastructure, so the different sectors, telecommunications, finance, etc. It's also very good in the fact that it provides these proactive and reactive services. Mm-hmm. It also has alignment to international standards, etc. However, I would say it's still a little bit of a different subject matter to the South African law that's been legislated recently.
Yes, in the
fact that the South African law goes into detail on what needs to be done for preventative response and recovery, while the mandate here is a bit more open and needs to be explored.
All right. For the average Namibian who doesn't really understand how important cybersecurity is in their own lives and how often they use the principles of cybersecurity, what would you say to them and what tips would you give to them to protect themselves?
Great. So looking at the public, the general public, the things that we often hear again and again that upset us a lot is when people lose money from their bank accounts.
Right.
And here there really are some fundamental cybersecurity practices that you can implement to protect yourself.
Right.
And how the pattern normally is that someone calls you, they have a little bit of information about you, so you trust them. They say they're from your bank. They have a bank name, so you trust them. And then they will give you a story. And with the story, they will put you under pressure. So your bank cards are expiring. Illegal transactions have come off. I can help you. Or they give you something happy. You know, you won a prize, but you need to give me your banking details now in order to accept it.
Right.
And by doing this to the public, they've created this sense of authority, and you trust them because they said they're from your bank and they know something about you. And then they make you very emotional. And when they make you emotional, what they're trying to do is put you under pressure so that you don't think before you share your sensitive data.
I see.
And so it's really important for us to recognize this pattern and understand exactly what sensitive data we cannot share. So we cannot share bank card details, so your bank card number, your CVV number, your expiry date on your bank card, your bank account number. You can't share these because if you share them, then that person can access your bank account. So from that point, it's really important to notice that pattern and know what to protect. I think from a business point of view, what we see is the main threat comes through phishing emails. And unfortunately, in our experience, we see a phishing email success rate of 20 to 30% in the businesses that we test. So this is incredibly high.
Right.
You know, this is an incredible risk to businesses.
Right.
And 2/3 of ransomware are delivered through phishing emails. So all of a sudden, you have 30% of people falling for phishing emails, and so much ransomware delivered, your business is really at a threat. So for businesses, I would say the key thing is really to educate your staff and do practical phishing assessments through a company or a provider to really test your staff members with practical threats.
I see. Well, thank you so much for joining us, Ms. Hopke.
Thank you very much, Sean. I enjoyed that.
The news never stops, and neither do we here at Eagle FM. We're committed to keeping you informed and in the loop at all times. But for now, let's take a quick visit to the marketplace. Stay tuned.
Mukongwele kwatoko maikuto amina apili kwa mavchaziva. Vereksema app auto kasinchav kamso zakale liferire. Mise kunani zencha. Kuzwa kwa kushimba lifera zalivuka kuya kwalifasi la lifera famakepe. Muvone maikuto amancha a imba app. Mwikutwe kulibusie mba santo ye mwietuna. Mwikole sfera fama kepe, marizo hola mina. Hamuvone, imba encha, niencha farizwe, ikopanya mifuta ya lifera matasa ep ilini, kukopanya naha, nikuhasa nyali njila mlimu. Zengwi, zefu mani hamasfera sesfa ep ya imba, ize tatama. Elsin, ehangano, oshiherero, omaemuriro, Catholic, Simane Kakarunga, Afrikaans, Nizengu Zengata. Mololi zeze kachenu, haiva mtavira kulisfera sa kereke ya mina, si ekezwe fa mkoloko walifera za imba, fa 081-2358-063, kapa mlumere imele kwa digital@omalite.com. Muzive ni kufumana imba kachenu, mkona kufumana fa App Store ni Google Play Store.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
Not fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You're the person who does not have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in Parliament, let me not take up my Katatura menace.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura.
Uh-huh.
And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to
be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before.
Mm.
It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past.
Mm.
And it's not something that Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the
eye.
Welcome back. Stay connected with Eagle FM, news without borders. Eagle FM is everywhere, always on, always accessible. Whether you're commuting, working, or relaxing at home, simply plug in your earphones and stay informed with minimal inconvenience. Our platform delivers real-time news and analysis straight to your phone, keeping you in the know wherever you are. In partnership with our sister ePaper, we provide concise, expert summaries of Namibia's latest business, economic, and policy developments, delivered digitally every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. It's your essential brief to start the week informed and stay ahead. Looking to grow your business reach? Our complimentary apps, including Imba and Eagle FM app, offer targeted opportunities for companies to increase visibility of their products and services across a wide spectrum of consumers, from urban professionals to rural communities. And let's not forget, our social media platforms are among the most active in the country, giving brands, startups, and individuals the perfect space to amplify the visibility and connect with engaged audiences in real time. Eagle FM, where your voice, your story, and your business are always on the radar. In other news, financial markets responded cautiously but positively to the announcement of a framework agreement between the US and China. On June the 10th, major indices such as the S&P 500 and the FTSE 100 saw modest gains, while oil prices nudged slightly higher. Investors welcomed the pause in hostilities and the potential for more predictable trade flows. However, the relatively muted response indicated that market participants are aware the agreement is preliminary and still lacks the presidential approval necessary for full implementation. The possibility of setbacks remains, especially given the volatile track record of past trade negotiations, between the two superpowers. Financial markets responded quite cautiously, and now we have another insert coming at you.
Representatives from the United States and China met for a second day in London to negotiate on tariffs between the two nations. A reminder, U.S. tariffs on goods from China currently stand at 30%, while Chinese tariffs on U.S. goods are currently 10%. And while the two sides haven't made any official announcements, U.S. Commerce Secretary Howard Lutnick told reporters that talks are going well and the two sides are spending lots of time together. Here to talk more about those negotiations and more, much more, is CBS News Money Watch correspondent Kelly O'Grady. Kelly, good to see you today. What can you tell us about how these talks are going so far?
Well, first, I can tell you investors are very eager to hear how this all sort of shakes out as our businesses and consumers. But this is the thing. I mean, this is why you're seeing the market tepidly optimistic, but pretty much flat today, is we don't have any concrete resolution. We don't have any sort of concrete data about what both sides are talking about inside those rooms. And, you know, we do expect these to last over the week. And so, yes, it is a very good sign that both sides are talking. And that is a lot of investors are taking heart from that. But we're getting different reads from both sides in terms of how they're going. The White House, the U.S. seems to be very optimistic, touting that good progress is being made. The Chinese, however, are not sharing that same optimism, kind of being mum about what's going on in the room. That being said, it could be a negotiation tactic. You don't want to share what you're holding in terms of cards in any good negotiation. But specifically, I think investors, if there is something good or bad that comes out of it that is very concrete, that is when you're going to see the market react in a big way, Mugo.
Okay. So I also want to ask you about this, because while the U.S. and China, they're obviously still negotiating, a report from the World Bank released this morning is showing how these trade wars are affecting the entire global economy. So what is in this report?
So as many reports have come out of late, the World Bank is expecting global economic growth to be less than expected. And one of the big reasons why is all of this uncertainty when it comes to trade policy and less trade going on between a lot of these nations, especially China and the U.S., two of the biggest economies in the world. They're expecting global growth to only be 2.3% in 2025. That is down from earlier estimates. And I want to share a little bit of sound that was shared about this report, if we can play it.
Developing economies are facing a triple threat: high debt, sluggish trade, and mounting uncertainty. This year, 60% of these economies are going to see weaker growth. We are expecting growth to be around 3.8% this year, inching up to 3.9% over the next 2 years. These growth rates are well below the pace necessary to meet development goals.
Now, that was the deputy chief economist of the World Bank sharing a little bit about that report and kind of what we're expecting over the next couple of years. I don't want you to panic, Mugo, though, because just because these analysts come out with these reports, we have seen how quickly those estimates have changed. They could certainly always change back, and it doesn't mean that they're right. These are just estimates at this point.
That's true. No panic from me, I promise. So on the domestic front, we've got a new consumer price index report that is actually going to come out tomorrow. What are you expecting from that report?
So the consensus is that we are actually going to see an uptick in inflation. In the April CPI report, we saw inflation come in at 2.3%. It's been moving towards the Fed's 2% goal over the last few months. The May report, this is still backward looking, right? We're in June, is going to show likely 2.5%. So moving in the opposite direction. And the big driver is that we are expecting now to see some of these price increases from tariffs that companies have been saying they're going to pass along to consumers actually show up in that data. So we're going to be parsing through the report tomorrow to see what specific areas show increases versus decreases. But this is going to be a big input as the Fed meets next week and decides what they're going to do about interest rates.
All right, Kelly O'Grady, I know we'll be talking to you all day tomorrow. So thank you for your time and for tomorrow. We appreciate it.
The news never stops, and neither do we here at Eagle FM. We're committed to keeping you informed and in the loop at all times. But for now, let's take a quick trip to the marketplace. Stay tuned.
Want to know about Namibia's latest business and economic news? Then look no further than the Villager newspaper. The Villager is an e-paper that is published every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday for free, directly to your phone or computer. To become a subscriber, simply send a WhatsApp message with your number and email address to 081-200-4144. Be sure to save the phone number as a contact. The Villager, wherever you are.
No matter where you are, if you have a mobile device, you can tune into Namibia's number one talk radio station by downloading the Eagle FM app on the Google Play Store or on the Apple App Store. Download the Eagle FM app to tune into live Eagle FM programming or to listen to podcasts of previous broadcasts. Eagle FM, Namibia's number one talk radio station.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
Not fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build. Why should you do that? You know, a person that does not have capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in Parliament, let me not take up my Katatura manners.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura.
Uh-huh.
And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to do.
Be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before.
Mm.
It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past.
Mm.
And it's not something that Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the eye.
And now for your economic indicators. The USD and the US dollar and the Namibian dollar exchange rate rose to 17.7570 on June the 11th, 2025, up 0.32% from the previous session. Over the past month, the Namibian dollar has strengthened 2.27% and is up by 3.96% over the past 12 months. And now for your foreign exchange updates, with your top currency losers being South Korean won at minus 0.52%, Japanese yen at minus 0.13%, the dollar index at minus 0.06%, and the British pound at minus 0.05%, whereas the gains are led by the euro at 0.06%. Up next is your agricultural commodities, with your top commodity gainers being orange juice at 1.43% and corn at 0.08%, whereas your biggest losers are palm oil at minus 1.01% and sugar at minus 0.58%. Up next is your metal commodities, with your top commodity gainers being platinum at 3.05%, iron ore CNY at 0.93%, and gold at 0.52%. And up last is your energy commodities, with your natural gas UK BPB at 1.86%, natural gas EU Dutch TTF 1.34%, natural gas at 0.64%, crude oil WTI at 0.43%, and Brent crude oil at 0.14% being your largest commodity gainers. Now, the South African Chamber of Commerce and Industry Business Confidence Index rose to 115.8% in May 2025, from a six-month low of 114.9% in the prior month. The slight improvement was supported by a firmer rand, stronger equity markets, and rising gold and platinum prices. The prior month's decline was likely driven by fears over U.S. trade policy, including President Trump's threat to impose 30% tariffs. As the U.S. is South Africa's second largest trading partner after China, such measures pose a significant risk. In response, the South African government has made several trade proposals, including following last month's meeting between President Ramaphosa and President Donald Trump. The country is now preparing a revised offer to purchase American LNG after its initial proposal was rejected, and is also considering adopting U.S. technology to expand domestic gas production. In other news, the U.K. stocks rise slightly higher ahead of spending review. The FTSE 100 traded flat to slightly higher on Wednesday as investors looked ahead to Chancellor Rachel Reeves' spending review, due after Prime Minister's questions around 12:30 p.m. The review will outline long-term government spending plans through the decade, focusing on infrastructure, healthcare, education, and housing. Reeves is expected to defend her fiscal choices and shift the narrative towards investment-driven growth. Financial stocks led gains, reflecting optimism from progress in U.S.-China trade talks. Companies with strong Chinese ties, such as Prudential, Standard Chartered, and HSBC, rose, while miners like Glencore and Antofagasta benefited from higher metal prices. Now, we're taking a short break, but don't go anywhere, and call in when we return with news beyond the borders.
Mukungulele kwa tuko maikuto wa mina apiri kwa mavchaziva. Mwvele kisema ep ato kasi nchavu kamso, zakale riferile, mise kunani zencha. Kuzo wakwa kushimba rifera zari vuka kuya kwa rifasi la rifera fama kepe. Mwvone maikuto amancha a imba ep, mwikutwe kulibusi emba santo ye mwinetuna. Mwikole sifera fama kepe, marizo hola mina. Hamuvone,
Imba yenja, nienja farizwe, ikopanya mifuta ya rifera matasa app ilini, kukopanya naha, nikuhasa nyalinzwi la mlimu. Zengwi, zef mani hamasfera sesfa app ya imba, ze tatama. Elsin, ehangano, oshiherero, omaimuriro, Catholic, smane kakarunga, Afrikaans, nizengwi zengata. Mululi zeze kachenu, haiba mtavira kulisfera sa kireke ya mina, si ekezwe fa mkoloko walifera za imba, fa 081-2358-063, kapa mlumere imele kwa digital@omalaiti.com. Muzive ni kufuma na imba kachenu, mkona kufuma na fa App Store ni Google Play Store.
Welcome back. And now for news beyond Namibia, starting in South Africa, increased demand for wood and paraffin has occurred in the Free State.
Wood and paraffin sales are soaring in parts of the Eastern Free State where a cold front continues to unleash bitterly cold conditions. Residents of Metdeleng in Ficksburg say they are doing whatever they can to stay warm and safe. Now let's get an update from SABC News reporter Ismail Modiba, who continues to monitor the effects of the cold front that's sweeping the country. Ismail?
Good morning, Leanne. Well, we are still here in Qwaqwa in the Eastern Free State. Now we are coming to you at the Thabo Mofutsanyane District Municipality. But if I just like, I would like just to get out of the shot for my colleague Tompo Mashau, just to give you a shot of the mountains behind us, just to give you that blanket of whiteness that is still there, that is creating the cold front that the people here on the ground are feeling so much. And obviously, this is what is left of it. But in some other parts, when we drive, that's where you'll be able to see it much, much better. But obviously, this is what led us to be where we are at this stage. You know, for now, we have, the coordinator for the disaster management here at Thabo Mofutsanyane, that is Stembiso Mthombeni, just to speak to us with regard to the disaster. Stembiso, I believe that you've got a JOC, that is a Joint Operation Committee, that is dealing with the disaster in the area. And you're also, not focusing on the eastern part as well, but you're also dealing or liaising with the KwaZulu-Natal. Let's share with us how you are operating in terms at this time of the year to ensure that this winter people are covered with regard to the challenges that we are facing.
Thanks, Ndate Modiba and the SABC viewers. Indeed, we every year actually we are meeting in April. We call it that a cross-border meeting. It is KwaZulu-Natal and Free State, whereby we check the resources that we have and also learn from the previous challenges that we had. If one can make an example, last year the snow caught us whilst we were not expecting it. In actual fact, the weather services indicated that there will be a snow on Saturday, but in the afternoon. However, it came earlier than that. When we wake up on Saturday, it was already white all over, and we couldn't even activate JOC. We had to rely on our cell phones. So this year we met on the 6th of May to check the state of readiness, the resources and all those stuff. We also done a dry run to check if should the snow really fall, we'll be able to handle the challenges of the snow. We're ready, actually, that Mudiba and the viewers, on Saturday. Immediately when we get the alert, we started to assemble all our graders, all the resources that we'll be needing. And we've been meeting since Saturday, Sunday, Monday, Tuesday. And even today is going to be our last day because now the weather has been cleared. But we are not just going to dismantle the JOC. We'll be continuing because remember, we are talking about a winter whereby there is a challenge of a snow and running fires. So now, since that the issue of the snow is now passed on, we'll be now focusing on possibility of the running felt fire. So we are ready. We had our graders and all the personnel, traffic officers, South African Police Services, non-governmental organizations like South African Red Cross, Al Imdad. We were prepared for any eventuality that can happen.
Now, in further news, Kensington without water for weeks.
How do you find out who to believe?
How do you do that as a resident?
Well, that's the thing. We don't find out who to believe. At this point in time, we are going by the fact of, do we wake up? Do we switch on the water? Is the water coming out? That's where we are.
And what about these MMCs and these councillors? Do they come out today to your area? Do they come and speak to you in person? Apart from WhatsApp groups, because I'm also on too many WhatsApp groups for my own health. Apart from WhatsApps, do you actually see these people?
No, they are holding a lot of meetings with residents, and the feedback that we're getting from our councillor is that he is meeting with people from Rand Water, he is meeting with people from Joburg Water, he is constantly engaging with them by the telephone, and he says that he's beholden to the information that he gets from them. Mm. And I think at this point, you know, the residents are, you know, fed up with that excuse. We're fed up with the fact that, no, you know, I'm beholden to the information that I get from the people who I'm asking questions to. You know, we want answers now. If the water's coming from the dams to the reservoirs, doesn't necessarily mean that the reservoirs are going to be full. What's the issue? Is it a pumping issue? Who is switching, or is there somebody in the department switching off our water purposely? Those are the questions that we want to know answers, and that's the questions that we want answers to.
So you're saying this has been about 5 weeks in some areas like Malvern and Cyril Dean. This is before the Rand Water maintenance. You were struggling with this. So what happened 5-6 weeks ago? Because was the water okay before and then something suddenly happened? Just take me through the timeline.
You know, the situation is we switched on our water and then there was no water. We switched on our water, then one day we switched on our water, there's no water. Yeah. And we asked him the questions and then on the groups, what's happening? And they said that there was a problem at the Aikenhof treatment plant in Vereeniging that needed urgent intervention and urgent repairs done to it.
Yeah, Aikenhof, okay.
And once they've done that, they said, okay, fine, the repairs are done. Now it's going to take 3 to 4 days for the water to come back.
Now, in further news, according to reports, fewer employees quit because they lack better opportunities.
So what needs to change here? And I would imagine that employer-employee relationships also play a big part. And also we're talking about mental health, especially ever since COVID. The mental health and well-being of employees needs to be put very high up on the list.
Absolutely. In fact, when we did the survey, we were looking at not just salary increases. And that's the interesting part, Rebecca, because we are seeing that as much as money is a very important hygiene factor, in order to engage employees, employers need to do a lot more than that. So those organizations that are responding to this crisis are doing lots more to review their total value proposition. As we said, the reasons why people are leaving, those that can leave, obviously, is because they're looking for career opportunities, they're looking for increased pay. So yes, competitive salaries are absolutely important, but holistic support to employees and as far as a value proposition that addresses the issues that you've just mentioned, for instance, mental health, skills and training, as well as flexibility. We're seeing a lot of emphasis around this flexibility aspect, including flexibility in the benefits that are offered, not just in the work arrangements, but also in the benefits, because that helps employees, for instance, from a retirement fund perspective, decide what it is that they can afford to contribute right now versus what they need to be doing in order to secure their long-term future. So a holistic value proposition is absolutely critical, and we are seeing those employers that are responding in that way actually start retaining people, but also ensuring performance and productivity is maintained.
Well, you know, just having conversations with family and friends, myself, just listening to colleagues as well, the new term we see out there is sort of toxic management, toxic bosses. We were talking about, you know, whether people actually who manage others are actually the right people for the job. Do we have a leadership crisis when it comes to the workplace? Is it a crisis?
We could have some challenges, and I do realize that we place a lot of emphasis on leadership, but it's a two-way relationship, as you said, Ella. It's an employee.
Now, before I continue, let's hear from our friends at ShopRite. Get where you save, your low-budget grocery store, where good food costs less. Get 100 grams of Nescafe Re-Coffee instant coffee for $34.99 or 10 tagless 5 roses tea bags for only $9.99. 1 liter full cream Nam Milk fresh milk for $18.99. 500 milliliters of Rietfontein or Shikandela at $17.99. And 6 2 200 milliliter boxes of Rhodes 40% fruit juice blend to enjoy at just $44.99 Namibian dollars. You save, we all save at You Save. Now, to continue with the report.
Employment relationship, which means both parties need to come to the party in order to make the relationship work. So what we are seeing is, yes, a number of employees are resigning because of toxic work environments.
Now, persistent inequalities in the water sector must be addressed.
The 13th Zambia Water Forum and Exhibition, ZAWAFE, has opened in Lusaka to examine the various efforts and innovations contributing to the attainment of the Sustainable Development Goals. The forum has a particular focus on sanitation and the role of the country's drought policy in fostering long-term resilience. Vice President Mutalena Lumango says government is pursuing a transformative agenda to address the challenges through the lens of the water, energy, food, ecology nexus. This was in a speech read on her behalf by Minister of Water Development Collins Nzovu during the official opening of the 13th ZAWAFE in Lusaka.
I extend a call to all stakeholders, governments, private sector, the academia, civil society and communities to rally behind a shared vision, a Zambia where every citizen enjoys access to clean water, sustainable energy and nutritious food supported by health ecosystems.
According to NGO Wash Forum, 32% of Zambians still lack basic access to water and a staggering 64% lack basic sanitation.
Indeed, even in urban areas, how we manage water supply and runoff must be carefully considered so that other users within the catchment, including our vital farmers, are not negatively impacted.
WWF has called for innovative solutions that can withstand and adapt to extreme weather conditions.
By addressing the nexus, we can develop a holistic solutions that ensures that water security, energy sustainability, food production and ecological balance. This integrated approach is essential for achieving the goals set forth for a nature-positive economy that is resilient.
Cooperating partners have pledged their continued support to assist the country address challenges in the water and sanitation sector.
We also support the restoration and protection of water catchments and their landscapes and their ecosystems.
The Finnish Geological Survey is currently working with the Ministry of Water Development on hydrogeological mapping. With the information that is being collected as part of the airborne minerals mapping.
And the Zambezi River Authority says it is implementing projects that are sustainable to climate change.
Installation of a floating solar on the Lake Kariba, for which the authority has partnered with the African Development Bank in the undertaking of feasibility studies in 2025 to pave way for the eventual of installation of the floating solar system is currently underway, and it will go a long way in the generation renewable energy mix of the two countries.
The theme for this year's forum is integrating solutions for sustainable development, exploring the water, energy, food, and ecological nexus. Sharon Siame, ZNBC News, Lusaka.
In further news, Uganda scientists protect mountain chimps in Bwindi Forest.
In the misty heart of Bwindi, every footprint tells a story of an elusive species few tourists ever get to see. Researchers and rangers are on a mission to habituate a little-known population of mountain chimpanzees, helping them grow comfortable around humans without disrupting their natural way of life.
For the chimpanzees, we believe that chimpanzees always nest like up the trees, but some of them now along the northern part of the park, we have been seeing them nesting down the ground.
Ground nesting chimpanzees are rarely documented, making this group not only unique, but also scientifically important. Yet the process of habituation is long and demanding.
You track them, you follow a single individual, you monitor all the activities they do. If they go under canopy, you go under canopy. If they climb up a tree, you stand under the tree. You stay with this chimp until it nests and goes to bed. And the following day, very early in the morning, you do the same. And this process continues until these chimps start to allow you to live within their territory without showing any signs of stress.
Bwindi is the only forest in Uganda and one of the few places in the world where mountain gorillas and chimpanzees share the same habitat. For ecotourists, this opens up a rare opportunity, not just a one-day gorilla trek, but an immersive, multi-day, multi-species experience.
They have been staying for so short time, but if this place is marketed and you're saying, oh, you will have one day of seeing the mountain gorillas, but you also have rest and have another day of seeing the chimpanzee. You have another day to meet with the communities out there. So you will see the three great apes. You are increasing the stay of the visitors within this very particular area. You attract, as these visitors stay, they will be spending more.
Uganda is home to more than 5,000 chimpanzees, mainly in Chibale and Budongo forests. But here in Bwindi, their true numbers are still largely unknown. This scientific habituation program is part of a national chimpanzee census, aiming to uncover just how many live here, how they behave, and how to protect them in harmony with tourism and conservation goals. It may also reposition Bwindi, not just as a gorilla territory, but as a unique destination for dual great ape tourism. Michael Balekesi, GTN, Kampala.
Scientists use AI in the fight against mosquito-borne diseases and parasites.
Mafe Cabreros knows just how serious dengue can become. She is among the hundreds of millions infected annually with the mosquito-borne tropical disease.
When I had dengue, I feel everything. I'm dizziness, vomit, and headache all around that. And then I feel weak.
Despite mosquito-proofing her home daily, she worries about how she can protect her kids. Researchers at the University of South Florida might have a solution. They're developing a mosquito trap that uses artificial intelligence to quickly identify the disease-carrying insects, potentially using it as an early warning device for local authorities to alert when there is a rise in risk to public health. The trap works by luring mosquitoes in with an attractant. Cameras then quickly identify the species. Sriram Chalapin is one of the researchers at the University of South Florida working on the device.
And, you know, given the advancements in AI, we decided that we can come up with a smart AI-enabled mosquito trap that can trap mosquitoes, use AI to automatically identify the disease-spreading ones, whether it's Zika, malaria, dengue, etc. Identifying where the disease-carrying mosquitoes are is very important because then the public health officials can go there and launch control efforts to prevent further outbreaks.
Experts say the device could be produced for under $150, allowing it to be distributed widely for early warning of an impending outbreak of dengue and other diseases such as malaria. Entomologist Tom Mascari said while new innovations will undoubtedly help against mosquito-borne diseases, educating the public about protecting themselves is key.
But one thing we know from a century or more of efforts to try and combat these diseases is that it's going to take more than one solution. So we know that tried and true things like using a personal repellent, one that contains DEET or picaridin or other active ingredients that are shown to be effective, we know that if you protect yourself appropriately with these products at the times when mosquitoes are going to bite you, and if you're particularly looking at mosquitoes that may transmit diseases, you know that you can have a big impact on protecting yourself or your family from these mosquitoes that could transmit disease.
Symptoms of dengue include fever, headaches, vomiting, skin rashes, as well as muscle and joint pain. In some cases, it can cause a more severe hemorrhagic fever, resulting in bleeding that can lead to death, killing upwards of 20,000 people a year.
Iraqi farmers use sprinklers to grow crops in the desert.
Iraqi farmers are increasingly expanding their operations into the desert.
Enabled by government-subsidized sprinkler systems, some farmers say the shift from flood irrigation to sprinklers has yielded them better results. Amid growing concerns over water scarcity, Iraqi farmers are increasingly adopting sprinkler systems to optimize water use and boost agricultural productivity. The shift in methods is driven by a wider government policy. It includes providing financing for sprinkler systems and supporting the adoption of hydroponics through training programs in cooperation with agencies like the United Nations Development Programme. Water scarcity in Iraq is a pressing issue, worsened by climate change and outdated irrigation practices. The UN ranks Iraq among the five nations most vulnerable to climate change, where climate-induced migration is already underway. While optimistic regarding his shift to sprinkler systems, Iraqi farmer Jadan Hassan notes challenges in maintaining them, such as limited government fuel support, leading farmers to rely on expensive black market alternatives. Still, the shift to modern irrigation methods has shown promising results. Chief Agricultural Engineer Akil Youssef said using fixed sprinkler systems for wheat crops has yielded good produce despite minimal rainfall.
During the season, we implemented fixed sprinkler systems for irrigating the wheat crop. And as you can see, the results were positive. The field is uniform, the amount of water was sufficient, and we needed poles this season. You know that each season differs depending on rainfall, and this year the rainfall was minimal.
In other news, the U.S.
President Trump's travel ban has come into effect, with the order primarily impacting countries in Africa and the Middle East. 12 countries face full bans, Iran and Afghanistan identified by the Trump administration as sponsors of terrorism, while African states such as Equatorial Guinea and Chad were said to have high rates of migrants to the U.S. overstaying their initial visas. 7 additional countries, including Venezuela, Cuba and Burundi, face a partial ban. Mr. Trump said the U.S. could not have what he called open migration from countries which lacked proper vetting procedures. The measures are similar to the travel ban issued during Mr. Trump's first term in office when he had banned travelers from 7 Muslim-majority nations. The UN Human Rights Chief has warned that the broad and sweeping nature of this new travel ban raises concerns from the perspective of international law. US Democratic lawmakers blasting the ban as draconian and unconstitutional. Our senior Africa correspondent Anne Sawyer is in Nairobi. She told us that the advance notice of this ban has at least made it a little less chaotic than the one implemented during the first term.
What analysts think is that it avoids the chaos that we witnessed in 2017 during President Trump's first term when he announced a travel ban and it took effect immediately. And people who are already airborne traveling to the U.S. were then caught up in that situation, many of them detained at the airport. The fact that there's an advance notice this time means that those chaotic scenes may be avoided. The people who also have permanent residency and green cards have also been exempted from the current ban. And you remember that in 2017, the United States government was sued in U.S. courts and the lower courts did temporarily put on hold the ban. But eventually the U.S. Supreme Court, after the ban was revised, then lifted it. And therefore, this time round, 12 countries, as you say, affected with a total ban and another 6 affected by a partial ban targeting certain classes of visas.
In other news, Zara owner Inditex's first quarter sales suffer after tariff fallout.
Zara owner Inditex's first quarter sales fell short of expectations on Wednesday. Revenue hit $9.45 billion compared to analyst forecasts of more than $9.5 billion. The Spanish firm also missed expectations on early summer trading. Sales between May and early June rose 6%, while analysts had forecast a 7.3% rise. It was also half the growth made in the same period a year ago. Inditex didn't provide a reason for weaker sales growth, But concerns about resurgent inflation and an economic slowdown caused by President Trump's tariffs have already hurt shopping enthusiasm in the US and other major markets. Major rainfall in Spain may also have led to a lower demand, with this spring being one of its wettest ever. Inditex called its quarterly performance solid, having labelled it very robust at its previous results announcement in March, when annual sales were up 10.5%. The firm's competitors have also experienced a sluggish spring. Rival H&M's sales have struggled, growing by just 1% in March compared to 4% in the same period a year earlier. Inditex shares were down 4% in early trading.
Oceans are not for sale, says French President Emmanuel Macron at the UN Oceans Conference.
The French President Emmanuel Macron says a treaty to protect international waters is on track for ratification in January. Mr. Macron, who is hosting a global summit on the oceans, said this would finally give the world an international framework to regulate and administer the high seas. Our reporter Pierre-Antoine Denis is at the conference in Nice and told me more about the atmosphere there.
Cautious optimism is how one activist that I spoke to on the evening of yesterday evening told me, you know, it's there. It's almost on the table. You know, Emmanuel Macron is usually a very optimistic person, but it's not the number of ratifications on there just yet. You need 60 ratifications for this treaty that was signed a few years ago to finally start to be implemented. It would put some governance around the high seas and change the narrative around what, you know, what is widely known as international waters, so that it stops belonging to no one, but starts belonging to everyone. This is the phrase that we've been hearing times and times again on Monday. But, of course, there are some questions around why is this taking so long? Countries need to pass it to Parliament. Why is this such a sticking point for many nations who said, give us a few more months and then we'll get to it. This is the bit of a discussions here. And maybe there is an element of greed, an element of impatience also around this conference. I've been speaking about this element with John Kerry, who is the former special envoy for climate here in the United States under the Biden administration. He's here to try almost and save the reputation of his country because Donald Trump called climate change a hoax, pulled the United States out of all sorts of climate agreements, wants to explore deep sea mining. But John Kerry, of course, who was very much in favor of putting renewable energy at the forefront of the United States, was telling me about how greed and differences are pushing everyone apart, but he hopes that there can be some momentum and that this is no longer a political fight in the United States.
The ocean is used as a dumping ground. We have over 500 dead spots in the ocean as a result of excessive pollution that comes into rivers and flows out into the ocean and has an impact. We see incredible levels of fishing that's illegal, that is not going to leave stocks for humankind. Even though the ocean is so vast, it's just being vacuum cleaned. It's being strip mined in a sense. Massive netting that goes out for 100 miles beyond a vessel and just scoops up everything in it. And a good percentage of what is scooped up simply goes in to feed for livestock and so forth. So we think there's a better way to manage the opportunities that we have. We can live very, very well. We think you live better. You will be healthier. It will be cleaner. We will be safer if we can transition to get rid of the things that are harming us, like emissions from burning fossil fuels.
Yeah, there you see the words of John Kerry, and there will be a longer cut of our interview later on this morning to try and understand a little bit more of the US position, how almost there is a fight where Donald Trump might have pulled the United States as a nation out of those climate talks and negotiations, but Americans still want him. That is the view of John Kerry. That is his position and the argument that he's trying to push here in this conference. But it is hard to believe for many nations who are already facing the reality of climate change and are seeing that the biggest emitter is no longer part of the conversation.
And finally, Musk says he regrets some posts he made about Trump.
Elon Musk says he regrets some of the posts he made last week about US President Donald Trump. The billionaire said Wednesday they went too far. Trump and Musk traded insults last week on social media. The Tesla and SpaceX CEO described the president's sweeping tax and spending bill as a disgusting abomination, sparking a fast-escalating exchange of barbs and threats. Trump said on Saturday their relationship was over, but he since stated he wouldn't have a problem if Musk called and wished him well.
I would imagine he wants to speak to me. I would think that. If I were him, I'd want to speak to me, but and maybe he has already called. You'd have to ask him whether or not he's already called, but I'd have no problem with it.
Musk wrote on his social media platform X, "I regret some of my posts about President Donald Trump last week. They went too far." He did not say which specific posts he was talking about, though he has deleted several that were critical of Trump. One of those signaled support for impeaching the president. Sources close to Musk have said his anger has started to calm. They also believe he may want to repair his relationship with Trump. Tesla's Frankfurt-traded shares were up around 2.5% Wednesday after Musk's online remarks.
And with that, we have now come to the conclusion on today's On the Radar News Bulletin. Stay tuned for the Okundana Vingi program with David Shumbe, Patemoshela Lukolo, and Bernadette Simon. Then follows the Home Run Show with Dwight and Helmut to keep you company on your way back home. So don't miss it. Have yourself a wonderful day.
Want to know about Namibia's latest business and economic news? Then look no further than the Villager newspaper. The Villager is an e-paper that is published every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday for free, directly to your phone or computer. To become a subscriber, simply send a WhatsApp message with your number and email address to 081-200-4144. Be sure to save the phone number as a contact. The Villager, wherever you are.
No matter where you are, if you have a mobile device, you can tune into Namibia's number one talk radio station by downloading the Eagle FM app on the Google Play Store or on the Apple App Store. Download the Eagle FM app to tune into live Eagle FM programming or to listen to podcasts of previous broadcasts. Eagle FM, Namibia's number one talk radio station.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
Not fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You know a person that does not have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in Parliament, let me not take up my Katatura manners.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura.
Uh-huh.
And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to do.
Be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before.
Mm.
It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past.
Mm.
And it's not something that Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the eye.
Mukungule kwa tuko maikuto amina apiri kwa mavchaziva. Mwere kusema app ato wakasi nchavu kamso. Zakare riferire. Mise kunani zencha. Kuzwa kwa kushimba rifera zari vuka kuya kwa rifasi la rifera fama kepe. Mvone maikuto amancha a imba app. Mwikutwe kulimusie mba santo ye mwietuna. Mwikole sfera fama kepe marizohola mina.